Crazy Talk is part of the AudioWorks podcast network. Other podcasts on the network include the Five Film Death Punch podcast, a twice-monthly interview exploring guests' five favourite films, and the AudioWorks podcast, weekly long-form interviews with interesting, successful and funny people. You can find out more at audio-works.co.uk. And welcome to Crazy Talk, a podcast all about mental health. My name is Meg, the host and creator of this podcast. Thank you for joining me. Before I start, it is super hot at the moment. We're in the middle of a bit of a heat wave and have all the windows open. So I apologise if you can hear any background noise courtesy of the teenagers that are hanging out on my street currently. Obviously having a great time because it's a bank holiday weekend, but yeah, they're being a bit noisy, so sorry about that. This is episode 14, which is pretty mad, to be honest. I'm not really sure how someone like me, who's already stretched a lot more thinly than I would like to be, has found the time and energy to do this every fortnight, but it's you guys who are listening and contributing to the conversation who keep me going with it, so thank you very much for listening. Now, I'm sure you know, or at least I hope you know, that in just over a week's time, our country faces a big decision. I'm talking, of course, about the general election called pretty last minute by our Prime Minister for reasons that I'm sure the government aren't being completely honest about, but I won't go into that. As a podcast about an issue as important as mental health, I thought it would be silly to not do an episode about the election in the lead up to June the 8th. There's a lot of important issues that are being faced by the country at the moment that the result of this election will massively affect. Housing and homelessness, the future of the NHS, education, the poverty that a lot of people in this country are living in, jobs, everything really. And within that and interwoven with a lot of those issues is the epidemic of poor mental health. It's so important to make an informed decision, because the result of this election could be really life-changing for a lot of people. So in this episode, I'm going to give you a rundown of what each party is offering when it comes to mental health. I'll also be inviting some former guests back to offer their opinions on the election, not just with regards to mental health, but also the wider picture too. So yeah, without further delay, let's get stuck in. Crazy Talk, episode 14, all about the general election. Right, so first things first, let's talk manifestos. So all of the major political parties have released their manifestos for the upcoming election, and every single one of them, I'm pleased to say, does have at least something in there about mental health, which is great. So I'm going to run you through them now, compare them, contrast them. But first of all, I just want to run you through the six priorities for mental health in England that Mind have kind of laid out. Just so that you can sort of use this as a comparison to what is actually written in the manifestos. So this is what Mind are saying needs to be in there. So number one, deliver the investment and commitments agreed in the five-year forward view for mental health, the national plan to improve mental health care, and go beyond this to take us closer to putting mental health on an equal footing with physical health. So this is something that we've spoken about a lot on this podcast, you know, viewing mental health and mental well-being as being equally as important as physical health and physical well-being. So that's a really great point. Number two, improve public understanding of mental health and reduce negative attitudes and discrimination. Something that's already going on, but obviously it would be great to continue that and for the government to have an involvement in continuing that and improving it. Number three, tackle the culture of fear and silence of mental health in the workplace by providing increased and better support and incentives for employers to create mentally healthy workplaces for all staff, including employees with mental health problems. For people with mental health problems who are out of work, ensure they are offered voluntary, individually tailored back-to-work support delivered by trained staff who understand how mental health can impact on a person's ability to get and stay in work. So that's brilliant. I think the workplace can be a really difficult place for people with mental health, so having that commitment in there I think is really important as well. Number four, make sure anyone with a mental health problem who requires it can access financial support from the welfare system. I mean, that's a no-brainer really. I'm not going to go too much into my political leanings, but I think it's going to be a bit obvious, and the Tories have continually cut benefits and support for disabled people, and within that people who have a mental health condition, people who are both physically and mentally unwell. So I think it's really important that that issue is tackled head on, because you know some people are so unwell that they can't work, so having access to financial support is really important. Number five, ensure local authorities have sufficient funding to deliver tailored social support and advice to alleviate debt, social isolation and housing insecurity, the issues that make life harder for people with mental health problems. Again, no brainer really, that kind of ties in with a lot of the other points. And six, change outdated and discriminatory legislation like the Mental Health Act and the definition of disability to ensure everybody with mental health problems gets support and respect. So yeah, I guess it's the same as sort of just getting mental health on a kind of level playing field with physical health, and you know, tackling this idea that it's not as important or it's not as damaging to somebody to have a mental health problem compared to a physical health problem. So that's Mind's six priorities for mental health in England. But how does that compare to the actual party manifestos? So let's start with the Conservatives. I'm not going to do this in any particular order, but obviously the Conservatives are currently in power. So let's start with them. So mental health is only mentioned in one section of the Conservative Party manifesto, and it's in the Confronting Burning Injustices section. I've got to say, all the section titles in the Conservative Party manifesto are very dramatic. I know that's a bit off topic, but Confronting Burning Injustices, it seems a bit OTT, but anyway. This section is called The Mental Health Gap. It starts by outlining how the Conservatives have increased funding in mental health since 2010 by a record £11.4 billion. With a further investment of £1 billion by 2020 so that we can deliver the mental health services people deserve. Okay, fair enough. So how are they going to do that? They say that first we will address the need for better treatments across the whole spectrum of mental health conditions. We will make the UK the leading research and technology economy in the world for mental health, bringing together public, private and charitable investment. Improving treatment services will not be sufficient, however. We will also reform outdated laws to ensure that those with mental illness are treated fairly and employers fulfil their responsibilities effectively. They continue that the current Mental Health Act does not operate as it should. If you are put on a community treatment order, it's very difficult to be discharged. Sectioning is too often used to detain rather than treat. Families' information about their loved ones is severely curtailed. Parents can be the last to learn that their son or daughter has been sectioned. So we will introduce the first new mental health bill for 35 years, putting parity of esteem at the heart of treatment. And the final paragraph reads, we will transform how mental health is regarded in the workplace. We will amend health and safety regulations so that employers provide appropriate first aid training and needs assessment for mental health, as they currently do for risks to physical health, and Extend Equalities Act protections against discrimination to mental health conditions that are episodic and fluctuating. We will consider the findings of the Stevenson-Farmer Review into workplace mental health support, working with employers to encourage new products and incentives to improve the mental health and wellbeing support available to their employees, and as we did with Dementia Friends, we will train 1 million members of the public in basic mental health awareness and first aid to break the stigma of mental illness. So that does cover a lot of the points that were listed in Mind's 6 points that they'd like to see in the party manifestos. There's quite a few in there. One thing that I feel is missing is any mention of children and young people's mental health. Is an issue that we've talked about quite a lot on this podcast, and how important education at a young age is regarding the topic of mental health, how important it is to support young people and teenagers, particularly in the digital age that we live in now where cyberbullying is such a massive thing. So yeah, it's a bit worrying to me that that's missing from here, but there are some good points, to be fair. There's not many specifics. It does all seem quite kind of broad. I don't want to use the word vague, but yeah, it's not super specific, but there are some good points there. And obviously, it's a good thing that mental health is covered in the manifesto in the first place. So yeah, fair play. So that's the Conservatives. So up next, makes sense to kind of go to maybe the next biggest party and probably the Conservatives' biggest threat in this election, which is the Labour Party. Now, the Labour manifesto has a slightly bigger section on mental health, and a few of the points are slightly different in here, which is interesting. So firstly, they mentioned that since 2010, mental health funding has been cut. The number of mental health nurses has fallen by 6,600, and remaining mental health budgets have been raided to plug holes elsewhere in the NHS. Now, that slightly contradicts the mention in the Tory manifesto about how, you know, there's been this record budget for mental health. I mean, you probably have to dig a bit deeper into that, because although it's a record budget, I mean, there must have been cuts. The Labour Party can't say this in their manifesto if it's not true, I guess. So I'm not really sure. But anyway, so the promises for mental health in Labour's manifesto are as follows. They start with Labour will work to reverse the damage done to mental health services under this Tory government, which is particularly hitting services for LGBT and BAME communities. So that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and black, Asian and Middle Eastern communities. I think that's what BAME stands for. I'm really sorry if I'm wrong in saying that. In order to protect services, we will ring fence mental health budgets and ensure funding reaches the front line. We will end the scandal of children being treated on adult mental health wards and stop people being sent across the country away from their support networks to secure the treatment they need by bringing forward the ending of out-of-area placements to 2019. Labour will also bring an end to the neglect of children's mental health. Half of people with mental health problems as adults present with symptoms by the age of 14. Yet across England, only 8% of mental health funding goes to services for children and young people. In recent years, referrals to child and adolescent mental health services have increased by 2/3, and the number of young people presenting to A&E units with psychiatric conditions has doubled. Suicide is now the most common cause of death for boys aged between 5 and 19. Wow, I didn't know that. That's a pretty shocking statistic. I'll carry on. Labour will invest in early intervention by increasing the proportion of mental health budgets spent on support for children and young people. We will ensure that access to a counselling service is available for all children in secondary schools. Giving mental health the same priority as physical health means not only ensuring access to services, but also making improvements to those services. Choice is important in a modern NHS, and patients who receive their therapy of choice have better outcomes. Labour will therefore ask the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence to evaluate the potential for increasing the range of evidence-based psychological therapies on offer. So that's Labour's section on mental health. I don't know if I want to say it's like more specific than the Tory one, because I don't think it is, but I think it covers issues that the Tories are kind of missing, particularly the children and young people. I mean, that stat about how suicide is now the most common cause of death for boys aged between 5 and 19, that's crazy. I didn't know that. So it's really important. I think it's really good that they're kind of honing in on that and focusing in on that. And I like the idea that they believe in an element of choice in therapies that are often in by the NHS. I think that's great, because at the moment I think the system is kind of quite rigid and you sort of just take what you're given, and obviously waiting lists are really long, so I think that's really cool. Again, it's not like, it doesn't go into a lot of detail, but there are some good points there. It's difficult. I mean, you might read the Conservative manifesto and think that's perfect, but then you could read this and think that's perfect too. There's holes in both. There's good things in both. For me, I think what the Labour Party is saying is a bit more promising, but like I said, I don't want to be... I'm trying to be impartial here, but it's kind of hard. So yeah, let's move on from the Labour Party. So next up, if we're going in, I suppose, size order, Liberal Democrats, a party that I'm going to admit, I voted for the Liberal Democrats in 2010. I was very passionate about the Liberal Democrats, and I did feel quite let down and disappointed that they chose to form a coalition government with the Conservatives, just because I feel that they're kind of quite opposing mentalities, those parties. But anyway, I have to say I'm very impressed by the Liberal Democrats section on mental health. So let's get into it. The section in the manifesto is called Equal Care for Mental Health, and it's nicely put into bullet points, which makes it a bit easier for me to kind of read out to you. So let's go through them. So firstly, ring fence funding from within the one penny income tax rise to provide additional investment in mental health. Continue to roll out access and waiting time standards for children, young people and adults. This will include a guarantee that people will not wait more than 6 weeks for therapy for depression or anxiety, and no young person will wait more than 2 weeks for treatment when they experience the first episode of psychosis. I've got to say, I think that's brilliant. Waiting times at the moment are ridiculous, so the fact that that's their, you know, second thing on this section is great. I'll continue anyway. Increase access to clinically and cost-effective talking therapies so that hundreds of thousands more people can receive this support. Examine the case for introducing a dedicated service for children and young people based on the Australian Headspace model and building on many excellent youth information, advice and counselling services. Transform mental health support for pregnant women, new mothers and those who have experienced miscarriage or stillbirth, and help them get early care when needed. Continue to promote and invest in the Frontline program to fast track exceptional graduates into children's social work, as well as the Think Ahead scheme aimed at encouraging high achieving graduates to pursue a career in mental health and social work. Ensure that no one in crisis is turned away with new waiting time standards and better crisis care in accident and emergency, in the community and via phone lines. This will enable us to end the use of police cells for people facing a mental health crisis. Now that is a massive problem actually, people being detained in police cells, particularly children who are having a mental health crisis, so I'm really happy to see that in there. End out-of-area placements, ensuring those admitted to hospital for mental ill health are able to be treated close to home. Ensure that all frontline public service professionals, including in schools and universities, receive better training in mental health. Roll out the Liaison and Diversion Programme nationally, helping to identify people who have mental health problems, learning disabilities, substance misuse or other vulnerabilities when they first come into contact with the criminal justice system. Tackle stigma against mental ill health, including by building on the good work done by organisations like Heads Together and changing the standard of proof in suicide conclusions in the coroner's court. And finally, ensure that LGBT plus inclusive mental health services receive funding and support. Now, like I said before, I'm massively impressed actually by this section of the Liberal Democrats manifesto, and it's difficult for me because, let's be realistic, the Liberal Democrats are never going to win a general election, at least not in 2017. So despite the fact that I'm super impressed by that, and I'm sure a lot of you listening will be as well, you almost feel like, well, how I felt after the 2010 election, which was that was a wasted vote. So Yeah, I'm not really sure. I'm a bit conflicted on that one. But yeah, that's the Liberal Democrats. So there are a lot of other parties as well involved in this election. The UK Independence Party, who I'm obviously not going to touch on because I'm not a dickhead. Plaid Cymru, who are the National Party of Wales, SNP. I'm not going to touch on those two just because if you don't live in Wales or Scotland, you're probably not going to vote for them. If you are listening to this and you live in Wales or Scotland, then by all means, go out and seek that information. It will be on the party's websites. But the last party I am going to touch on is the Green Party. The Green Party, I don't think, have released a full manifesto, but they have this green guarantee that they've released. And within that, there is a section about mental health. So it says, the Green Party will aim to bring mental health care in line with physical health care and ensure that people experiencing mental health crises are supported close to their home and support networks. They will introduce mental health awareness training within the public sector and encourage a more open dialogue on the issue in wider society. So it's quite brief, but like I said, this isn't a full manifesto. It's just kind of their guarantee that they've released ahead of the election. But it does touch on a couple of the points that some of the other manifestos have, and it also lines up with some of the points in mind, kind of six things that they'd like to see in manifestos. So, yeah, again, fairly good stuff. Could be a bit more detailed, but, you know, I'll leave that with you. I hope that hearing all of these has given you a bit more of a bit more of an idea of what all of the major parties are offering with regards to mental health. And I mean, in general, I would urge you to just go out and read the rest of these manifestos, swat up on what all of these parties are offering, make sure that you're making an informed decision because it is so, so important. That's the manifestos. We've got the really important stuff out of the way now. So I wanted to also invite some former guests from this podcast back to offer their opinions on the election. Quite a few of the people that I have spoken to on this podcast are very politically savvy. So I know that they'll be able to offer some good insight into how they're feeling ahead of the election, you know, maybe what way they're swaying, what's standing out to them in the lead up to it. So first of all, I spoke to Harriet from episode 4. If you've listened to this podcast from right back in the beginning, you'll remember Harriet spoke to us about her experience with not alcoholism, but just having a troubled relationship with alcohol. And it was a really interesting episode. So if you haven't actually listened to that one, that's episode 4. So go back and have a listen. But yeah, Harriet is definitely, like, she knows what she's talking about when it comes to politics. She has done her research, and so I thought it would be really, really interesting to talk to her. So this is what Harriet had to say about the upcoming general election.
You know, I think I'm really glad it's happening, to be honest, because the state of the country at the moment is depressing to me. Like, I can't even think about living under a Tory government for the next 5 years just because, you know, I look at Northampton in general, and I went to see Russell Brand about 6 weeks ago, and I was walking up Abington Street with a couple of friends afterwards, and the amount of homeless people that we saw was just shocking. And it just, what reminded me is, like, I remember Abington Street when we were younger, so when embargoes was on like a Tuesday and a Thursday, there always used to be tons of people around. Do you remember, like, just walking down Abington Street on, like, an evening and the week? There always used to be, like, tons of students, tons of people, like, going to enjoy their night out and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was walking down, and there must have been 15 homeless people, like, under different shops, you know, just getting shelter. And I don't think it's a coincidence that homelessness is rising. I firmly believe it is just because, you know, as a Tory government, we've cut backs and just not even not caring about those who, you know, need help. And that's just from Northampton. Like, obviously, there's a wider picture in other cities. But even, like, when I went to Milton Keynes a few weeks ago, underneath, like, the paths where...
The tents.
From the train station to the shopping mall, there was tents.
Yeah,
I walk in total shock.
I walk through there every morning. And it's like, because
yeah.
I work in Milton Keynes now, and like,
yeah.
It's crazy, like, these people actually, that is their home. They've got all their belongings outside around the tents and stuff.
And it's just shocking. And I don't think, growing up, I ever saw a homeless woman, like, ever. I think I would just, there would just be homeless men. And I was absolutely shocked that there was, like, three women in one tent. And I just... was totally shocked by it, and I just think it isn't a coincidence. It is just, you know, Tory government not caring about anyone except from themselves, and it's just shocking because, you know, I speak to people quite often about, you know, their political views, just because it's something that I've been very interested in. I was never interested in politics growing up because I do believe, you know, it wasn't taught in schools. It was something that we wasn't made aware of at a young age. But as the internet has become more accessible, I've been sort of forced into sort of doing my own research and becoming quite interested and passionate about the Labour Party. But, it's just shocking to me that anyone... of our friends or people that I know would even contemplate voting Conservative, because I just can't get my head around why. It's just confusing to me because everyone I know and everyone I associate myself with, work with, socialise with, they are all people like me. So that's from a working class background. They earn roughly the same amount as I do, which is not over £80,000. And it's just shocking to me why anyone would vote Conservative, because they don't care about people like us. Like, the Tories do not care about, you know, anyone who is not living a lifestyle of, you know, earning over... I just keep saying 80,000 just because I don't... because I've been reading about... you know, how much people would be taxed over £80,000. But it's just shocking to me because just none of their policies would apply to people like us. I just think that people that vote Conservative, in my opinion, only care about the likelihood of themselves. I speak to people sometimes. I know probably a handful of people that vote Conservative, and they are very much like... well, if the NHS goes private, I could afford it. Therefore, you know, it doesn't affect me. And I think people that vote for a party that is not part of the wider picture, people that vote just because of what they would be affected by, is totally wrong. You need to think about others that in this country, and the Conservatives just don't. That's just not what part of their... plan is. I just don't understand why anyone would want to vote for someone who just wouldn't even incorporate the wider picture, which is, you know, okay, I have a roof over my head, I can afford to eat and get to work and do nice things with my friends. Other people can't, but that doesn't mean it's okay. Like, you just need to think about others in this situation, and I just think Conservatives don't, and that it's just a very, very selfish party. I look at the cutbacks, you know, like through the NHS, my family, I've been brought up, my mum, you know, she's a nurse, my sister's a nurse, my other sister worked in a prison, my dad, you know, he works at a factory. We are very working class family, so I've been brought up with the idea, you know, you need to protect the NHS and you need to protect people like us, because we rely on the NHS to get by. I can't even imagine what life would be like without the NHS. I look at Americans who post their hospital bills online, and I just can't even imagine what life would be like laying at home in pain or discomfort and not being able to even afford to go to the doctors to get checked out or even surgery, because you just can't afford it. And it's just wild. It blows my mind that, you know, people in America, my auntie lives in Chicago, and, you know, you just have to think about medical bills before anything. And, you know, it's a massive privilege that we have free healthcare. So it really scares me that, you know, we might not have the NHS anymore. It's something that terrifies me, because, you know, what happens if I want to have a baby one day? It's going to go and deliver a baby in hospital. It will just cost thousands and thousands of pounds. And it's just, you know, it's just quite a scare. It's quite scary thinking of the future without the NHS. And I just think one of the main reasons, I've got many reasons as to why I would vote Labour, but one of the strong ones is because we need to save the NHS, and we need to look after those who work for the NHS, because they do so much and they just get paid so little, and they're so overrun. And, you know, you go into hospital and, you know, you know that you could be there 12 hours, but regardless, you're still grateful that this is all free to us. And it's just quite frightening to even think about that being taken away. And I just know that the Tories are looking to privatise the NHS, which is, you know, it's just going to put up a barrier, even bigger barrier, for those like me and you who aren't part of the, like, people who earn ridiculous amount of money. And I just am frightened for people who do struggle already. It's just not fair, really. And it's just quite frightening. And thinking of us being part of a Tory government, I just can't even think about it right now. It's very scary. Very, very scary.
I think a lot of the things that you've talked about are linked as well, because I believe that the epidemic of homelessness that's kind of happening at the moment is quite closely related to the epidemic of poor mental health within the wider population, because a lot of people who are homeless have got there because they've had mental health problems, and, you know, they haven't been able to go to work, so they've lost their job, and then they've got evicted and stuff. So I think you're right, you know, if the NHS becomes privatised, that's going to be even harder for people who need help to access it, which means that, you know, more people are going to find themselves on the streets, or, you know, in really dangerous situations. So I think it's all linked, and I think, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I didn't want to say on this episode who specifically I'm voting for, but I think it's quite obvious, because I think anybody who has a sense of, like, compassion for other people and for the wider population is not going to vote Conservative, because they've only got the best interests of the elite.
I went round my friend's house last night, and we bought it up. Just, we were having dinner, and we just, you know, it just came into conversation. And I was explaining, like, me and my dad was saying the other day, I don't know the percentage, so I'm not just going to guess, but quite a high percentage of people are one paycheck away from being homeless, which is me as well. If I lost my job and I didn't get paid a month's wage, there's no way, unless I was to seek help off of my family or friends, or take out a credit card or loan from my bank, I could not afford rent. Yeah. I don't have that money sitting there waiting for emergencies, although I'd like to. I don't have that money because things are expensive nowadays. You know, if I lost my job and didn't get paid, I would not be able to afford my rent off my own back. And I've got a full-time job, like, let alone people who you know, can't work full time,
yeah,
or can't work at all, you know, I look at myself and I know I'm in a privileged position because I have a job and I'm mentally well, physically well enough to work. Those who aren't, I can't even imagine the stress and the worry they go through every single month when bills are due and when, you know, children need food, children need to go, you know, school uniforms, stuff like that. It just is horrifying. And I think people don't realise the state that this country is in when it comes to poverty. When people think poverty, they think of starving children in, you know, countries that, you just don't think that poverty means people with a full-time job. Like, nurses who work for the NHS use food banks.
Yeah.
Like, because they cannot afford to eat. And that is poverty. And I just think people that haven't, you know, even thought about stuff like that are just selfish because, yeah, you might be okay because you're lucky, but what about your next door neighbour? What about your family, your friends? You know, I think a lot of people, being British, we don't talk about a lot of the time what people are going through. I think it's just part of our culture. But I know my friends and some of my family, they have no money, like no money spare, and they live, you know, paycheck to paycheck. And I just think, you know, we're lucky because we have jobs, but regardless, we need to think about those who don't, and we need to help each other. I don't understand why people wouldn't want, if they have the facility to, why people wouldn't want to look at the bigger picture and think, okay, I'm okay, but I might not be in a year, so let me think, or I'm okay, but, you know, people I know aren't, or there's people who are homeless on the streets, people regardless whether you know them or not. You need to look at the broader context and just, you know, think about others who need help. I read horror stories every day about the cuts and how they've affected people. With the Manchester bombings on Monday, there was a thread on Twitter. The Manchester police posted that they will be up in security, and someone replied, like, due to Theresa May's cuts, I got made unemployed. I used to work within a certain sector of the police, and they've all got experience regarding terrorism, but due to the cuts, they were made redundant, lost their jobs. And it's just like, it's just the media have such a way of painting the Labour Party time and time again. And sadly, people do read these papers that say Jeremy Corbyn isn't a strong enough leader, but a lot of the time as well, Jeremy Corbyn, although he, in my opinion, is an amazing man, he is just the face of a party. You need to not look at, the likes of Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn. You need to look at the whole party themselves. He is just representing one party. And the fact people turn around and say, he's not strong enough, he's going to turn the country to shit. It's like, just look at what he stands for rather than himself, if that is the case, because it blows my mind how anyone can vote Conservative in the state that this country is in at the moment. It's just shocking to me. Yeah. Absolutely shocking.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember as well that when you vote in a general election, you're not voting for Jeremy Corbyn or Theresa May, you're voting for your local MP. And in the last election, in my constituency, it was between David McIntosh for the Conservatives or, oh God, I can't remember his name, but the Labour guy, he was great. He was young, he was passionate. And David McIntosh won. And, you know, he's ended up being, like, kicked out because he was just useless. And it's like, people need to remember, look at who your local MPs are, compare them, and then make a decision. You know, it's not Theresa May versus Jeremy Corbyn. It's the Labour Party versus the Conservative Party versus the Liberal Democrats versus the Green Party, etc., etc. So it's like, it's important to look at that as well, I think, and not base your decision just on who's going to be the Prime Minister.
Exactly. It is, it's worrying. People keep saying to me, do you think that Labour will win? And to be honest, I was so certain last general election that Labour would win, and I was so certain on Brexit that we would stay in. So now I just am scared, because one thing, you know, I'm always like, well, I used to be like, well, everyone I know votes Labour, so who's voting Conservative? And I think that's just because I surround myself with, like, people with the same, you know, likes of mind as myself. So it's what's encouraging is the amount of young people who have signed up to vote this year. It's just, that's encouraging for me. I've been looking at stats almost daily to see, you know, what sort of people will be voting Labour, and all I can hope for is that we are under a Labour government, because I just think it's going to benefit so many people. And I am terrified of what will happen to the country. I look at the country at the moment and it's just scary, and I just don't know what I will do if we stay under a Tory government, because it's just, I can't relate to anything that the Conservatives do or say. I just can't relate to anything. And when I look at their like manifesto, and you know, the fact that Theresa May wouldn't even go on Question Time just shows me she's just, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just quite scary. I'm just quite scared of everything that's going to happen. But we'll just have to wait and see.
So that was Harriet's viewpoint on the upcoming general election. And next, we've got a little bit of a piece from Ollie Knight, who you might remember from episode 3. Like Harriet, Ollie is very switched on when it comes to politics and stuff. So I thought he'd be a really good person to talk to. So here is what Ollie had to say.
I've been asked by Meg to weigh in on perhaps how the upcoming general election is going to affect sufferers of mental health. It's a tough one. I mean, we can sit here and we could list off the past records of which parties have the better kind of track record with this kind of thing. But I feel like that misses the point. We're seeing in this country record highs of mental health problems. I mean, I'm just looking at, you know, you can just look at any graph and see how terrifying the statistics really are. I mean, the admission of teenagers to hospitals for self-harm, like almost 19,000 teenagers were admitted to hospitals for self-harm in between 2015 and 16. You know, rates of depression and anxiety amongst young people is increased 70% over the last 25 years. I feel there's a trend there. Maybe society as we know it is perhaps crippling people mentally nowadays. Maybe there's something inherently wrong with the way the society is in fact structured that fosters these kinds of thoughts and feelings in people. You know, it's terrifying. We have when it comes to an election, you have a kind of a chance to engage in the democratic process to a certain degree, you have a chance to use what little voice you have and well, be heard to a certain degree. I mean, it's trapped in strict and archaic rules that perhaps don't best represent the way that people think. But at the very least, we live in some kind of democracy and you can be heard. I don't want to sit and tell you who to vote for. I feel like it's pretty obvious, if you're a mental health sufferer, who not to vote for, considering they wanted to tax dementia sufferers, which watching my nan go through is one of the worst things that can happen to a mind. You know, it's there is clearly a certain sect of politicians who don't take mental health seriously, who don't perhaps don't understand, because they've come from a background where perhaps they never had to deal with depression and anxiety. Maybe pressure never got to them in the same ways that it does to a lot of people. They talk about ending the stigma around mental health. I think that stigma is ending. I think podcasts like this one prove that. I think people are now more willing than ever to talk about their mental health issues. What we need is infrastructure. We need a government willing to be proactive with people who suffer with mental health, see it as an illness, not see it as irrational. Treat it in the same way you're treating a broken leg, you know. That's how it should be. I think I'd also issue a word of warning. There may be a way that you want the upcoming election to go. You may, and I'm not telling you not to hope, but there might be a lot of hope for a certain outcome. If that outcome doesn't come to pass, maybe the hope over 24 hours, it can go from being something that fills you with joy to something that really hurts. I know that happened to me the last time that the general election rolled round. I felt an overwhelming and unbearing feeling of sadness and disappointment when it didn't go, not my way, but what I would have considered a more more socialist society. That's what I've always hoped for. A society that works for everyone. You know, you've got a voice, use that voice. But, you know, with 2 weeks to go, yes, the gaps are closing between what could maybe be considered two ideological standpoints. But I've decided not to hope. I'm going to do my bit and fight still. But I can't hope, because that hope is going to lead to a very dark day, June the 9th, if it doesn't go the way that I think we need it to go. But it also doesn't mean that June the 9th is the end. Politics doesn't come around every time there's a general election. It is every day. And there's a lot you can get involved in at a local level. You know, we're trying to tackle the country in a general election, and sometimes that's a task that's gargantuan. You can fight locally. You can get involved with a party that, you know, just look at the manifestos. Who's tackling mental health? Who's looking at it? Get involved with that party. Get involved locally. See what youth groups are about. I know when I was young, youth groups were at an incredible source of strength for myself in battling all the myriad problems my mind would throw at me. You can get involved at a local level, and yes, it's not the sweeping grand gesture that would be regime change, but it all helps. And you might find that if you get involved locally, you can appease some of that darkness that's nipping at your heels, maybe. I don't have much more to say. Meg asked me to get involved because, as she puts it, I can be quite politically savvy, but I don't want to sit here and I don't want to sit here and tell you which way to vote, tell you what is the most beneficial way for you to vote. Go out. The manifestos are online. They're there to be seen. You can look for yourself, because there isn't just two choices. It's not a two-horse race, particularly not locally as well. Because the most important thing to remember is that how you vote in a general election, it decides your local MP as well. So maybe get in touch with your local, your local hopefuls, and see what to do. I will say that of the manifestos that I've looked into, of the policies that I've looked into, it's no surprise that Labour, the Green Party, the Lib Dems, the SNP are all the kind of parties that are really getting behind mental health issues. I still think that, I mean, that you can always do more. You can always do more. And a lot of it comes down to, as well, properly funded NHS. Because a properly funded NHS won't feel the stress of mental health sufferers. We need to keep big business and privatisation out of the NHS. That's one of the big... A lot of people have tried to turn this general election into a single issue election. A lot of people think it's Brexit. That's happening. It's going to happen. No matter how you think about it, that's coming. That will be seen through. If you want a single issue, it is the NHS, and that affects, you know, if any of you listening are mental health sufferers, which I assume probably a lot of you are, it affects you directly. I rely on the NHS to keep me sane, in a certain sense. I rely on medication, and I like being on medication. It gives me control. I think we can't lose that. I don't want to be paying some fat cat who's decided to hike the price of my pills because he wants to make a profit, because he gets dollar signs in his eyes when he sees sick people. We don't need people like that in charge. That's not how this world should be. So look to your neighbour, look to your family, look to who you see as hurting. Think, who's the party that's going to help me and them? We need to end the I'm All Right Jack parade. That needs to be over with. I think a society that is going to be bettered is a society that gets angry at social injustice, that gets angry when other people are suffering, not just themselves. You know, we need to stop lining our own pockets and just bring up, raise up the needy. There are people on the streets everywhere. You walk around Northampton, there are my hometown, there are stacks of homeless people. Can't carry on. It cannot carry on. But yeah, I've rambled enough. I fear losing my point. thanks, Meg, for having me again. I hope this made sense to someone.
Right, right, so that's that. I hope you found this episode helpful, and I really sincerely hope that you go and vote on June the 8th. Hopefully you've been able to take something from this episode to kind of aid your decision. Thank you very much to Harriet and Ollie for offering their insight on the upcoming general election. I really appreciate it. As always, you can get in touch with me by email at crazytalkthepodcast@gmail.com or on Facebook. The page is at Crazy Talk the Podcast. You can also find information for help and support on there as well. You can like, share, rate and subscribe to the podcast. That would be massively helpful. And thanks again for listening. Hopefully I'll see you again next time. Until then, take care, guys.